How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling. And as we record this, SummerSlam is upon us. It is going to happen soon. And there are some matches people are looking forward to. The Drew McIntyre, CM Punk match is probably the biggest match on the card, I would say, at this point. And so we'll see what happens at that show. But this week, we are going to be giving you one of our rebooks, which is always fun. Basically, we take a event / pay-per-view, and we usually choose ones that are not critically acclaimed, and we rebook it sometimes with a lot of stipulations, sometimes with not a lot of stipulations. We try to use the roster as it was at the time of whatever event we choose. So, this week, we are going to be rebooking SummerSlam 1993. It took place August 30th, and from Auburn Hills, Michigan, the Palace of Auburn Hills. And this was a weird time for the company, right, Leonard?
Yeah, it was very transitional. Hulk Hogan had just left following King of the Ring 93. Yokozuna was the champion. And Vince McMahon felt, I need a new Hulk Hogan, and decided to do that with Lex Luger, turning him face very fast. I will say that the whole special they did on the USS Intrepid for the 4th of July is iconic. I really think that was a very neat, out-of-the-box idea to do. Right. Luger slams Yokozuna, and then he campaigns to get the title shot here, driving across country in a bus called the Lex Express. But as we'll get to, the main reason that this show is considered to be one of the worst SummerSlams, or at least a very notorious one, is the outcome of the main event.
Right. And the tagline, Fat Chance, and Somebody Has to Stop Him. Quite the creative taglines there. The attendance was 23,954. And let's go over the original card first. There was a dark match where Owen Hart defeated Barry Horowitz, 8 minutes and 32 seconds. The opening match on the card, Razor Ramon defeated Ted DiBiase, 7 minutes and 32 seconds. The Steiner Brothers defeated the Heavenly Bodies, Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard, with Jim Cornette for the WWF Tag Team Championships. The Steiner Brothers retained, 9 minutes and 28 seconds. Shawn Michaels with Diesel defeated Mr. Perfect by countout for the Intercontinental title. Shawn Michaels retained there at 11 minutes and 20 seconds. IRS, Erwin R. Scheister, defeated the 1-2-3 Kid in 5 minutes and 44 seconds. Bret Hart defeated Doink the Clown with Jerry Lawler by disqualification in 9 minutes and 5 seconds. And then Jerry Lawler defeated Bret Hart by disqualification in 6 minutes and 32 seconds. Ludwig Borga defeated Marty Jannetty by submission in 5 minutes and 15 seconds. The Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeated Giant Gonzalez with Harvey Whippleman in a rest in peace match in 8 minutes and 4 seconds. Tatanka and the Smoking Guns defeated Bam Bam Bigelow and the Head Shrinkers in 11 minutes and 15 seconds. And Lex Luger defeated Yokozuna by countout. Yokozuna was with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette. 17 minutes and 58 seconds. Yokozuna retained, however, because it was a countout. Leonard, do you remember what a rest in peace match is?
I believe, from having double-checked the show, it was more or less a no disqualification match, but they did not explain it very well.
Right.
What it was and
that is. So the main event, Luger had to wear protective padding on his forearm. This was Luger's only shot at the WWF Championship as long as Yokozuna was champion, except if he won the Rumble match.
Right.
So that is the card, and this is not a good event, is it? It's just not a good event in any way. Everybody can see the match on there that was probably good, that being Shawn and Mr. Perfect. You have two disqualifications, then a submission in short order. It's just the middle of this card is like paint dry dull, in my opinion.
But yeah, I mean, everyone focuses on the main event having that lackluster finish. And the fact too that Luger gets hoisted up on everyone's shoulders and there's balloons and confetti from the ceiling. I mean, he didn't win the belt. And because of that main event, people kind of gloss over how bad Undertaker Gonzalez was, how bad everything with Hart and Lawler and Doink was, and stuff that was possibly good gets completely forgotten. Like Michaels and Hennig, I forgot that was a match on here. And then everything else is just sort of there. So, you know, but the talent, they still have talent at this point. And this is, a lot of times we'll do these, and I'm maybe not too happy with what I've come up with. I kind of like what I've done here this time around. So, as usual, we do have a few caveats that we like to throw in to kind of make it a little more fun. And playing off of the actual show, you have to have at least one stipulation match. You have to, or gimmick or stipulation match. You have to have a 1 6-man tag, and all title matches have to be decisive finishes, no DQs or countouts in those matches. So those are the three things that we're dealing with. I have 10 bouts, including one dark match.
Okay, I have 9. And let me just say before we get started here, so it seems the tables have turned a little bit in regards to like our outlook of our cards. Because this was really difficult for me, because of the main event, and I'll get more into detail as we get there. But this was not easy to me. Like you were talking about how they have talent, they certainly do. However, it is few and far between in what matches make sense on paper. And okay. I really tried hard. I'm anxious to see what you have. Because I really had to dig here, and you know, you better not have used Hogan.
I did not. I okay. did not use Hogan.
He was technically on the New Japan roster if you look at the date.
Yeah, I mean, it crossed my mind, but I thought that was too big of a cheat, so I did not use Hogan.
Yeah, neither of us.
Since I've got 10, I'll go ahead and start with my dark match, which is the 1-2-3 Kid versus Marty Jannetty. And I did this as a dark match because I couldn't really think of a good reason for these guys to have a match or a storyline. They were both faces at the time. They were both kind of a makeshift tag team around this period. Kid was coming to his own. Jannetty could still go. They were probably the two best high flyers that WWF had this time. So the idea that we always talk about, you want to open with something that's going to wake the crowd up and get them going. These two guys just going out there and putting on kind of a clinic of fast-paced high-fly wrestling is definitely going to wake up the crowd. So I booked this match just as something to get the crowd going.
I totally get that. I also had a dark match. It's half of a joke, but it also involves Marty Jannetty. Marty Jannetty is Ludwig Borga in a pain meds on a pole match is what I have. So, yeah. I wanted to have a dark match because, you know, I didn't, you know, I needed it to have another match. And where I was when I worked on this card, I really didn't have access to the roster, you know, the way I wanted to. So when I did look at the roster, there was like one guy that I could have used that I wanted to use on this card that I ended up didn't use him at all. And that was Rick Martel. But I couldn't really figure out a way to use him. So. This is what you have in the dark match, pain meds on a pole match. You know, Vince Russo is doing the magazine at this point, maybe. So who knows?
He's around just spitballing ideas occasionally. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Yeah, I can't say a whole lot more than that other than that it's an amusing idea.
If you wanted to have a dark match where it was for real, you could just have these two guys without that weird stipulation that I made. And it would be a squash because I guess for a cup of coffee, Ludwig Borga was somebody that they were interested in pushing.
Yeah, much so. And I'll get to that because I did use him as well. And funny you mentioned Rick Martel because I did use Rick Martel. He's in my opening match, Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig versus the model Rick Martel. And to give this some juice, I'm going to make it a number one contenders match for the Intercontinental title because both guys were kind of floating around that level at this time period. I was surprised to find out that Martel was with the WWF until 1996, but he was pretty much off of television from this point to then.
Right.
Hennig had turned face in late 92, had a nice program with Flair, but hadn't really done much since. So as we transition to from the previous era to the new generation era, I just like this as a reminder of what the WWF had been, you know, in the later 80s to early 90s when both these guys were getting their singles pushes. These are both good all-around wrestlers. They sold great. They knew each other from being in the AWA together. So definitely Hennig has more upside. I would give Hennig the win here, but this is just on paper a very, very solid match.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a lot of combinations I wanted to put Rick Martel in. Couldn't really think of one that I really stuck with. But yeah, that's a good opening match for sure. And or not opening match. Was it your opening match?
Yeah, it's my opening match if you don't count the dark match. So the dark match and then this was the opening of the main show.
No, I think that works really well. And I think that I want to think that they would put on a good match. My opening match is for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Shawn Michaels versus the 1-2-3 Kid. So after the 1-2-3 Kid did his upset on Razor Ramon, you know, he had built some momentum by winning a couple matches. I think he beat DiBiase as well. And, you know, what better way to keep that going than to have some sort of, you know, interaction with Shawn Michaels where he's, you know, talking trash to Michaels and works his way into an Intercontinental title match. The way I would see this match going, I would see Michaels retaining, but I would see it being a situation where the 1-2-3 Kid gets what looks like a, you know, three count. Maybe Michaels has his hand on a rope or something like that. The referee initially, it looks like he's going to be the new champion, but the referee says no, and they restart the match. And Michaels wins by some sort of chicanery. That's kind of the way I see it going in my head. But I think that these two guys would have put on a really good match. We know that they, if not at this point, would become friends. So, I think that this would have been a fast-paced way to open the show.
I almost went Kid versus Michaels. I think that actually makes more sense than what I did with Shawn Michaels in the IC title match. But I stuck to my guns and what I decided to do. And it makes sense for everything that you said, the way the Kid was coming up at this time, period. The fact that it would be a very good, fast-paced match on paper. And I like the idea of that it would look like Kid won and then he didn't. I think that's a great way for both guys to save face. I also think it's a great way to gauge the fan reaction. If they think Kid won the belt, what kind of pop does that get?
Right.
And that helps you to plan, oh, maybe we will do that for him in the future because of the way the crowd reacted. So that's great. And like I said, I almost did that, but instead I did my next match, which is for the IC title. Shawn Michaels is a champion with Diesel as bodyguard against Owen Hart. So Michaels and Bret Hart were already circling around each other at this time because they had a champion versus champion match at Survivor Series 92. Owen was on his way up, as we know, who was part of the Hart family Survivor Series team at Survivor Series that year, who would go against a Michaels-led team because Lawler wound up leaving the company and Michaels stepped in. So, and Hart was on the cusp of breaking out because he would have that great match with his brother at the next WrestleMania. So let's start building Owen now and let's start building a feud maybe between Owen and Michaels or the Hart family and Michaels or playing off of how Michaels still has it in for Bret and doesn't like Bret. And because he can't get at Bret this show, which I'll get to, I'll take the baby brother out. So I think this is a good match. Like you said, with Kid and Michaels on paper, I think it's fast paced. I think it's high flying. And I would have Michaels throw like Owen to the floor and have Diesel, you know, attack Hart, roll him in, have Michaels get the finish from there. Of course, Michaels distracting the referee during that period. And then that's going to lead to my next match, which I'll save. But that's the basic thing here. And of course, Michaels retains the IC title.
Yeah, I like that. I think it sounds good. And I think that these guys have more chemistry than, you know, maybe history remembers. They were slated, or at least it looked like they were going to have a pretty big feud after Bret left, you know, due to the Montreal screw job. And it really never got the traction it should have, probably because of backstage politics and all that nonsense. But I think these guys have could have had good chemistry. I know that they've worked together, you know, before. And yeah, you're right. I mean, for all the reasons we mentioned in my match, I think that this would be equally as good. Owen was really young and hungry here. So my next match is one of those matches that, you know, I thought could work if we really commit to it, and that is Razor Ramon versus Bam Bam Bigelow. I was trying to find something for Razor Ramon to do, and like I said, I couldn't think of something to do, because obviously Razor is slated to have a huge Intercontinental title feud with Michaels, and you could even make a match like this. You mentioned a number one contender match. You could even do something like that here. Bam Bam Bigelow, as we've seen in many, you know, interviews and documentaries, is very underrated for a big guy. And the WWE did have, you know, somewhat high hopes for him eventually when he main evented a WrestleMania. But I think that, you know, if you made this kind of a rough around the edges brawl type match, maybe a mixture of in-ring stuff and outside the ring stuff, but a straight up match, I think that these two could have a decent 7 to 10 minute match and have it entertain the crowd. So I would probably have Razor win here, obviously, because he's headed that direction. So.
Yeah, you use Bam Bam in a similar situation to I do, which we'll get to. But yeah, I like that match on paper a lot. I think those are two guys that stack up well. I think they are kind of underrated as far as being guys who could work with anybody. And I think guys who could work different styles. I think Bigelow is very agile and fast for his size. And so is Razor, who cut down a lot of weight between, if you go look at Big Scott Hall to the Razor Ramon era. Right. And I think that definitely helped his speed and his agility and all that. So I think these are two guys that, if they get on the same page, could do some good work. So I do like that matchup a lot. So my next match plays off of my previous match. It's going to be Diesel versus Razor Ramon. So I've got Ramon coming out and telling the referee, hey, Diesel interfered. Because, again, Ramon and Michaels were set to do an IC title feud. So Ramon gets involved. Diesel interjects himself, attacks Ramon, and we get just this impromptu match out of nowhere. And I would have this ending be inconclusive, with Diesel either getting disqualified or Michaels pulling him out of the ring and saying, hey, we're taking a walk. And this would basically be a chance to take a look at Diesel in the ring, because I don't know if he had had any matches, at least on TV at this point, just being Sean's bodyguard. And of course, Ramon and Diesel had worked together as Vinny Vegas and the Diamond Stud in WCW. So they knew each other. They could work together with each other. So I would say this is just an opportunity for management to take a look at Diesel. Hey, what does this guy look like in the ring? Let's put him in there with the guy we know can work in Ramon and just see what that looks like. Now, this match would probably have made more sense if I had used 1-2-3 Kid in the IC title match, because Ramon and Kid had become allies at this point after Kid had beat Ramon. And Ramon's kind of like, good on you. So that made more sense. I just was very married to the Hart versus Michaels idea and still think that you could do the Ramon coming out and having that be a part of it. So you've got the outsiders having a match with each other, I think, long before that feud, you know, happened. Before that feud happened in WCW, but I don't know if they had a match up to this point. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know that they did either. And, you know, I forget which. I think we did a rebook where I did this.
Possible.
But it was like a title match, and I think it was when Diesel was on top. I think I might have put that into one of our other rebooks. I forget which one. But yeah, I think that, and the reason I did it is because we know, you know, in retrospect, you know, how much these guys enjoyed each other's company and how close they were. And they could have had a really good feud here in this era of WWF. So I like this match. I think that, you know, it even makes sense to have it be kind of a schmoz finish. I think it would be fun to watch. So this one kind of came to me. One person in this match who I really struggled of what to do with him. And then the answer kind of came to me based on, and this is out of order of when I post these shows, I apologize, but based on conversations we've had in previous episodes. So I have here Macho Man and Lanny Poffo versus Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett.
I love it.
In a USWA street fight. And here's why I'm making it a USWA street fight. The WWF had a relationship with them at this point.
Yes.
Jerry Lawler was the heavyweight or the main champion there.
Yeah.
Macho Man at one point in that era was the main champion there. So they had a lot of stuff going on in between them. Now, Jarrett would debut later this year. So he wasn't there yet, but he was on his way. And I think that this would have been a logical and just fine way to debut him. There's a lot of history here. I think you could play into that. You know, think of how great the concession stand brawl was with, you know, Honky Tonk before he was Honky Tonk, all that.
Yeah.
I think that this could be a really fun brawl. And like I said, the story is there. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely a story that you need to build up for the WWF fan base before you get there. But you would have plenty of time if you knew you were going to do that. I think anyone who's on the USWA roster is fair to call in because of that working relationship they had. So Lawler doing a promo where Lawler basically calls Jarrett, you know, the next generation, you know, type of thing, kind of anoints him. That works to bring him in that capacity. You definitely have to do something where Randy and Lanny kind of come together.
Yeah.
Given they
maybe,
were on opposite
maybe one of these handshakes, right?
Yes. Now. Yes. A power handshake. Maybe they come out to a State of Shock and dance in the ring together.
State of Shock. Yeah.
And do that. But you would even have to teach the fans that they are brothers because they never talked about that in the WWF. And again, this was before the internet and before your hardcore people did tape trading and kind of knew, but a lot of people didn't. So I think you do need to do a lot of setup. But once you get there on paper, I love this. This is brilliant. It's going to be fun. These are four guys that are, you know, while I think good in the ring, can also do a brawling style and a fun style. And like you said, the concession stand brawl, doing a callback to that, all that is really, really good.
Before you move on to your next match, I'll just say one of the ideas I had, I could have saved this, but like one of the ideas I had was to use Macho Man in the main event.
And okay.
Even had a good way of building it. Like this is post Rumble where he gets pushed from a pinning position out of the ring by Yokozuna. So you could say he's embarrassed. He wants revenge on Yokozuna, all this kind of stuff. But at this point in Savage's career, like you would probably have Yokozuna squash him, you know, or not squash him, but beat him handily. And it's like, is that really what you want to do in the main event? Maybe not. So I didn't go with that. But anyway, I thought that was a logical story or could have been anyway.
Yeah. You know, I think I had Yoko versus Savage in one of our previous rebooks too. That might've been our WrestleMania 10 rebook.
Yeah.
I think I did that. So next up I've got the 6-man tag and I've kept one team the same. So I have to Tonkin the Smoking Guns of Billy and Bart against the $1 Million Man, Ted DiBiase, IRS and the Repo Man. So to Tonkin and the Guns, as I said, were the actual 6-man tag on this card. And I like the theme, the Cowboys and the Indians together. That's a good theme. I think that fits together. And they're going up against the Rich Bullies. Of course, all three of those guys had worked together in the past. Repo Man last wrestled for the WWF in March, but he wouldn't show up into the WCW until the next year. So he was just kind of floating in the wind at this point. Could easily be brought in to be part of this here. And I think this match is a prime example of how cartoony they were getting at this point with some of the characters. I mean, it was cartoony in the 80s, but is even more so, I think, when you get to the New Generation era with some of the characters. So that's an example of that. Definitely with the Repo Man on his way out and Tatanka still getting a major push, I would have him pin Repo Man to give his team the win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the six man match was hard for me as well. My next match is not that, but you know, the combination you had seems fine to me as well. I mean, in this era, they had so many random guys, and you talked about the cartoony nature, and my six man certainly falls into that.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that that's at least a match. If you look at it, there's a theme to the teams.
Right. Yeah. My next match is Mr. Perfect versus The Undertaker.
Okay.
So I thought that this was a feud that you could have done at this point. Now, Mr. Perfect wasn't really wrestling much, or wouldn't be after this. You know, I think he was like a last minute replacement at Survivor Series, but you know, he wasn't long for the in-ring work at this point. So I think it would be fun to give him a heel Perfect feud here against The Undertaker. You could have, like, Mr. Perfect used to do these, you know, vignettes where he would do sports. Like, you could have him do something disrespectful with the urn, like throw it like a football or something. You could start with the simplest of disrespecting actions for Mr. Perfect.
Right.
You know, you could have the promos, you know, you might be scary, but you're not perfect. Whatever. It could be this era type feud, and it could be a solid in-ring match, because Mr. Perfect was one of those guys who could work with anybody. And I think The Undertaker at this point, who was still like a little just dead man only in the ring, could benefit from somebody like this.
I would love to go back to see if they actually had a match at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if around this era they had something at a house show, you know, or the monthly MSG shows. I think they're still doing
random match reviews.
Yes. Now, let's see if we can find one. But yeah, I never would have thought of that combo, and I do like it. And Kurt always worked better as a heel. So having him go heel and having him being the aggressor on Taker. And I love the, you know, you're scary, but you're not perfect. You know, you're dead, but you're not perfect, or whatever.
By the way, I would probably have this end in like a double count out.
Okay. With,
like, Mr. Perfect being like a little bit afraid of The Undertaker. And it would lead to maybe a different style match, maybe not rest in peace match, whatever that was, but something else.
Right. In the future, I think that makes sense here if you want to do more of a program and not just use Kurt to get Undertaker over. But that's a good match. You're thinking outside the box. I think this is one of the few times where we are both going in kind of totally different directions. A lot of times we'll have some of the same matches or some of the same ideas, but we're really going different with this one. And I really like that. So
yeah.
I don't think you know what I've got coming up next. I don't know what you got coming up next. So that's kind of fun.
Absolutely.
So next up, I've got Lex Luger versus Bam Bam Bigelow. In my history, Luger wasn't granted the championship match against Yokozuna that he has been campaigning for. And in order to prove himself further worthy of it, he's given this match against Bam Bam Bigelow, who's the second biggest guy on the roster next to Yoko, more or less. You know, I certainly think that Bigelow is a better match for Luger than, say, Mabel or Giant Gonzalez.
Right.
So went with Bigelow here. I would have Luger win and do it pretty cleanly. Again, similar idea to what you did with Bigelow, kind of using him to get the next guy over. And just continue to build Luger as that main event face. You know, one big complaint was Luger's push happened so fast and so out of nowhere. So let's slow it down a bit. Let's give him this show to get another good solid win under his belt. And we can build towards that Yokozuna match at Survivor Series, at the Royal Rumble, something else. But this is just putting Luger in there with an opponent that is going to make him look good.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to use him for sure. I was very conflicted about how I used Lex, and, you know, we'll get there. But I think that makes sense, and it would be a way to continue building him if indeed that's what we would want to do. So my next match is my six-man tag match. And you have to bear with me here, and I'll explain my logic. It is the Heavenly Bodies and Giant Gonzalez versus Doink the Clown and the Head Shrinkers. Now, here's what I would do. The Head Shrinkers and Doink, they're all dressed like clowns.
Right.
You have the Head Shrinkers coming out looking like clowns, and Giant Gonzalez would, you know, picture this as like an Attitude Era feud. You would have Giant Gonzalez trying to say, look at the body I have. I have a heavenly body like you guys, because he wears that stupid outfit. So you could have the Heavenly Bodies and Giant Gonzalez all come out in outfits like that. And I don't know why. I don't know how that kind of stuff pops into my head. But, you know, that's what I see. I see, you know, them all wearing the bodysuit tights.
You thought outside the box to do the theme for the team.
Yeah. Well, I honestly didn't know. I didn't want to use the same teams for this because I used the same match in another place. And I was like, gosh, who do I use? Why would it make sense? I was like, well, you know, the head shrinkers could dress like clowns. That would be funny. And I was like, who else do I put? I was like, I'd love to see the Heavenly Body still on the card. And Giant Gonzalez is there, so we should use him somehow. So it was just kind of like a who do I use and why, and trying to think of ways to entertain the crowd.
Given the limitations, some of those teams, although there are some good workers there, I think that's go for the humor of it. Sure, is Afa outside the ring, and is he dressed like a clown?
Why not? Absolutely.
And do the Heavenly Bodies and Gonzalez have Harvey Whippleman and Jim Cornette, and are they in the bodysuits?
Nobody wants to see that, but that would be hilarious, though.
Nobody does. Although I kind of like the idea of Whippleman and Cornette working together on the outside.
That's true. Yeah, that would be funny.
I think that would be funny, them trying to like prove that they're, you know, the better manager for the team, and maybe that would lead to miscommunication and the faces winning here. Definitely, that's visually striking. I think that's one of those things that even if it's a car crash type of match, which probably would be, I think that's something that people would remember very fondly because of
the joke. For nothing else than to just the outfits, right?
Yeah, the makeup and the outfits and all that. So that is fun. I really like that a lot. So my next match is The Undertaker with Paul Bearer versus Ludwig Borga. And I'm going to make this a casket match since nobody knows what a Rest in Peace match is. And originally, I thought the match that they did have was a casket match that Undertaker had with Gonzalez. And then I saw it was a Rest in Peace match, and what was that? And I looked it up and blah, blah, blah. So Borga was being built up to go against Luger at this point, but there was also rumors that he would do a program with The Undertaker. And I recently watched a video kind of recapping Borga in the WWF, and he's really not that bad. He's got a pretty good moveset for a power wrestler, and was doing some kind of different stuff than what other power wrestlers in the WWF was doing at the time. So this might be cutting him a bit short from his rise, but he wasn't in the WWF, I don't think, too long after this. So, you know, do a casket match, get the most you can out of Borga against Undertaker, have Tigger win, put him in the casket. He's gone. And I think you could have easily built something between the two of them, between WrestleMania and now, kind of what Borga was doing, calling out Lex. Maybe he calls out Undertaker in a similar fashion, type of thing. So that is a gimmick match, but I have another gimmick match coming up as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that we should do a spotlight on Borga then, you know, and maybe take a closer look at his career.
Sure.
I think that he would have been or could have been, you know, the typical and fitting type of opponent for The Undertaker in this era. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you put him in the casket. That's all she wrote. And, you know, yeah, I think that would have been an interesting way to use him for sure. My next match is IRS versus Ted DiBiase. In a winner take all money pit match. I don't even really know what that means. But you know,
Real quick, I'll tell you, in that long term fantasy league that I'm doing, a guy, and I think it was last year, did IRS versus Ted DiBiase, and the idea was that IRS had stole all of DiBiase's money because he did DiBiase's taxes and his accounting and everything, and basically funneled the money into his accounts, and that was the feud.
I love that idea. I'm going to steal it and use it right now for this feud. And, you know, you could do anything. You could make it just like kind of a no DQ style type thing where you have money kind of surrounding the ring somehow. And, you know, you could do different things with it. Basically, my setup for this feud was, I don't know if this happened. I think it would have made sense. And this event was Ted DiBiase's last pay-per-view match.
So, yes, I did find that when I was looking at stuff.
Right. So you could have, you know, I think every rebook I have, you know, some semblance of a loser leaves town situation. So
yes,
you could have either one of the two of these guys lose and then leave. Not a huge, you know, loss in this era, really. But both of these guys also are competent workers. The history is there. And, you know, I think you'd have to make DiBiase the face here somehow. IRS is such a, there's no way you can make that character likable.
No, you know, considering that DiBiase was a face in Mid-South, I think, especially if you do it where he loses his money and he has to go back to his roots type of thing.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, and that was what the guy did with the booking I was telling you about. So yeah, I think that is definitely, you'd have to put the work in. I think what we're finding is a lot of what we're coming up with is you would have to put in a lot of work to make right. the storylines work between, say, WrestleMania and now. But again, if you know this is where you're going, it's easy to do with those several months of time.
Right.
So I have another gimmick match. I did not realize that I had back-to-back gimmick matches until we started going through the card. But oh well. This is a tornado tag for the WWF tag team titles, pitting the champions, the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, against the head shrinkers of Samu and Fatu with AFA. Now, these teams fought at WrestleMania 9, so let's escalate the rematch to a tornado tag. Both these teams are stiff. They're brutal. They could put on some wild affairs. AFA can get involved here. I don't remember the Fed doing a lot of tornado tags. That seems like something I remember more from the NWA. So different outside the box for them, kind of similar to the street fight that you had in a tag match. So this is just, so this would be my chaotic brawl. Let it go all over the place. Let it be crazy. Steiners would retain.
Yeah, I mean, the Steiners didn't have a huge amount of tag teams to work with when they were in WWF. No. But, I mean, if you're going to escalate it and make it more chaotic, I think that's a good idea. And the Steiners were really great in this era. So, yeah, I think that would be a fun match to watch. And speaking of the Steiner brothers, my next match is the Steiner brothers versus Owen and Bret Hart for the WWF Tag Team Championship. So one of my favorite matches of all time is actually a match. I think it ends in either double DQ or double countout, but it is on one of those random WWF Superstars VHS tapes. And Gorilla Monsoon does the commentary. I forget who else, but it is these two teams. And it is a stellar match. I highly recommend seeking it out if you can find it. And I think that it should have been on a bigger stage. The whole Owen and Bret thing was about ready to begin anyway. I think it makes it much more interesting if you were to have, say, Owen and Bret win the titles here going into Survivor Series. And we know that based on the match that I mentioned that these teams could put on a clinic. So I would have loved to have seen this on this stage and get away from the Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler feud that, that was going on. I almost went with like a Hart versus Hart tag match, like with, Bruce and, Keith, because they were going to use them, you know, coming up anyway. I thought about that for a second. I was like, nah, this is better. So yeah, this would be. So my main event is not necessarily a technical classic matchup. So I made this the runner-up to that specifically to have them put a 25 to 30 minute, you know, just wrestling clinic on. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is a great idea. And I think they can both be faces going into this with Owen leaning heel. I think you can have Owen being the one who's running his mouth and encouraging Bret, hey, you got to tag with me, big brother, so we can go get these belts off the Steiner brothers. I think that may be the story that you can do here with this. But just on paper, this is going to be a real technical classic. I mean, this is back when Rick and Scott were in their primes. One of the best tag teams. Bret and Owen are going to sell great for them. I love this. The 100 different ways. It's a really good idea. And like you said, it does help you to build towards that Bret Owen feud and storyline. And them taking the belt off here and even having a short run with them, I think helps to energize that tag team division. Because as you said, it was very bad at this point. There wasn't a lot going on with it. And that can be even be a reason. Could be the Steiners saying, hey, we don't have any competition. We beat everybody. So that's where Owen says, hey, me and Brett can take you out. And Brett being like, what now? Take the thing. But I like that on paper a lot. So my sub main is Macho Man Randy Savage versus Jerry the King Lawler in a loser can't be a commentator anymore match.
I like it.
So, real easy to set up. You know, Savage and Lawler are working a three-man booth on Raw with Vince McMahon. They're constantly picking at each other, with Lawler saying the announce table just isn't big enough for the two of them. So, it winds up with them putting their posts as commentators on the line. Now, as you alluded to, and as most people know, McMahon wanted Savage to become a full-time commentator. He wanted to wrestle still. So this is a good way to move Savage back to full-time wrestler while also having him kind of get quote-unquote punished by Vince for wanting that. Like, okay, you want that? Fine, but you're going to job to Jerry Lawler. And, you know, as we mentioned, these guys have a history. You know, they're 10 years older from when they worked in Memphis together. Lawler was doing a lot of stealing and a lot of goofy stuff at this time. But I would love to see both these guys just get old school, take it back to Memphis, just put on a match like they could back in the day. You know, the saying goes, I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm good once as I ever was. And both these guys in 93 could still do that.
Yeah.
So I think this has a possibility of being a really, really good match, and a match that people would still talk about.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this would be fantastic. And like you said, they both could still do it. And, you know, I really wish, you know, I mean, Jerry Lawler was such a great color commentator and, you know, was such a great character. But, like, they never really gave him, like, opportunities to show just how skilled he was often enough. I remember there was a random Raw that he and Ric Flair, both much older at that point, where he and Ric Flair had a one-on-one match. And, you know, it was like not long, but it was like classic, you know, style wrestling match between two guys that been doing it for a long time. And like, it just, it kind of makes you like wish that they had done something more with him like this. So yeah, I like this idea a lot. So my card, I really struggled with this. I really did. Like I said, I had other options of what to do here, but I kept the match the same, save for the finish. And it's Lex Luger versus Yokozuna. I could not think of a way, like, you just kind of put him in a feud with Bam Bam Bigelow, which is cool. I thought to myself, they had been done so much buildup with the USS Intrepid, and they were pushing him so much to be this hero. Like, what could I do with him if not this? I had thought about making this a gimmick match, and like, you know, we could, you could even tell me which, if you think it would be a good idea. Like, I had thought about maybe a dog collar match, but I was like, oh, I don't know. It's not, this is not the era for that here. And of maybe of some sort of bull rope match. Specifically, I thought of these gimmick matches to show off Luger's strength more, because he's not great in the ring. We know that, unless he's working with somebody that's also great. So,
so something where he would be tethered to Yoko.
Right.
And be in close proximity.
Yeah, show off how strong he is, and kind of mask the fact that these two guys are not going to impress you with their technical skills. But I would have Luger go over here, because I think it makes sense.
It does.
And I think that you could still have a big moment with Bret Hart and Luger at WrestleMania 10. You could still have a big moment. Maybe, you know, they don't hoist Bret Hart over their shoulders and stuff like that. But I think it makes sense to give Luger the shot here. You know, I understand in reality why they didn't. But that's what how I would end things here, because really, literally, all you have to do is change the finish, because they, all the pomp and circumstance they have at the end, like, leads you to believe that not only has Luger won the title, but he's also become the president. So that's what I would do.
You know, I wanted to do something different for the main event. But you are 100% correct. The thing that makes the most sense is to have Luger win the belt. That's just what makes the most total sense here. And I do like the idea of you trying to give that a gimmick that would kind of help both guys out and be different. I think that is smart. And this doesn't have to be long, and it doesn't have to be a technical classic. But if it's Luger, Yoko, Luger has to win the belt.
So, right. I mean, picture it like short, like they were doing with some of Lesnar's matches. More recently. Like, I mean, once they, you know, it's kind of amazing. Once they figured out with Goldberg and Lesnar, like, you know what? Let's just make these guys have short matches that are really explosive. Like, it's like, wow, you know, people can get behind that. You know, I mean, this is obviously a lot earlier than what that
was. You know, pack everything into 5 minutes and trying to make them stretch to 10.
Right.
Makes sense. It really does. So my main event is for the world title, Yokozuna as the champion with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette versus Bret Hart. So Luger's campaigning with the Lex Express for the world title match at SummerSlam, but I would have Bret Hart campaigning as well based on how he lost to Yoko at WrestleMania and what happened with Hogan after that. And then Bret's the King of the Ring. So it becomes like a political campaign with Bret and Luger campaigning against each other, but friendly. And Hart gets the nod over Luger per Jack Tunney. So I would have Luger to come out to maybe prevent Fuji and Cornette interfering with that backfiring. Maybe Luger ducks Fuji at one point and he hits Hart, or Fuji goes to throw the ceremonial salts and he ducks and that goes into Hart's eyes. But I would have Yoko retain, but Bret still gets screwed, and that leads to animosity between him and Luger. Because either guy here, I think, could easily go heel from this point. Yeah. And you build this triangle at the top. You're preparing for what still went down for real at the Royal Rumble and then WrestleMania 10. Maybe you could do something at Survivor Series. So I did think about bringing Hogan in to face Bret, as Bret was promised to get Hogan at WrestleMania at SummerSlam.
Of course, that's the match we always wanted to see.
Right. But then, as you said, yeah, he's gone. It's a little bit different than, say, me bringing in the Repo Man, who was just sitting at home, after this period, somebody like that. So I would definitely use this. So again, a conclusive finish, Yoko winning, but with the cheating and building up that triangle. So again, like you said, it makes sense to have Luger win here, but if it's not going to be Luger, I think you use Bret Hart and you build this triangle. And again, it's looking forward, and maybe it's hindsight 2020, knowing what we get to start that build here.
Would you still have Hart win at WrestleMania 10, or would you have maybe Luger take that spot?
I think I would still have Hart win at WrestleMania 10. And I think I would probably have Luger go heel, because I think Luger makes a much better heel.
That's what I was thinking, because I could see at the end of this event, like, you know, the narcissist music plays.
Yes.
And like somebody brings out mirrors for him to look at himself. And he's like, you know, I was never true blue, you know, American, USA. I'm still a narcissist.
Like, yeah. That didn't work for me, trying to cater to you people. Like, he's a fake politician. I was smiling and shaking hands and kissing babies and trying to get that title match, and didn't work. So I'm just out for me now. So maybe I wouldn't have him do that promo here, but I would have him do it the next night on Raw type of thing.
Right.
But Hart Luger, with Luger as a heel, I think was an opportunity that they didn't let go, because Luger is not nearly as bad as a lot of people remember him as. And if you put him in somebody who could work like a Flair, the matches were pretty good. So I think a Bret Hart could get the most out of a Lex Luger.
I agree with that for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think our cards overall are better than the card that we got, which was, you know, honestly, really didn't look super thought out.
No, I don't know, because I wanted to say, well, they weren't really used to doing so many pay-per-views at the time, but, you know, SummerSlam had been around since, what, 88?
Yeah.
And perhaps it was because slotting the King of the Ring in there messed up their storytelling.
Right.
Hard to say, but definitely Beluger misstep. And that was because of Vince, because he thought there's more money in the chase.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that based on podcasts I've listened to that, you know, obviously Luger is a much different person now, but, you know, back then he wasn't necessarily, you know, number one on everybody's friend list. And, like, people, he rubbed people the wrong way. I wasn't there. I don't know. It's just what I've heard. But yeah, so, you know, and, you know, history showed us that they were not ready to ever pull the trigger on him. So yeah, let us know what you thought of the original event. Let us know what you think of our cards. Should we have used somebody differently or use somebody that maybe we didn't pick at all? Feel free to comment. Check out our other videos, Segment Surgery, Stupid Questions, Random Match Reviews, What's That Card? We're also available wherever you listen to podcasts. For Leonard, my name is Chad, and we will see you next time.